Hi everyone, this is Avash Kalra, one of the founders of Radio Rounds. Before today's episode begins, I just want to tell all the students listening today about an exciting new contest during the month of December 2011. The American Medical Association's MedPlus Advantage Insurance Program is teaming up with Radio Rounds and Timmy Global Health to bring you Take a Trip with Timmy. The winner will spend 2 to 3 weeks working with Timmy medical teams or partner organizations in either Ecuador or Guatemala. You can learn more at takeatripwithtimmy.com, and we'll tell you some more details about this exciting contest later in today's episode.
Production made possible in part by MedPlus Advantage.
You're listening to Radio Rounds, a talk show created and hosted by medical students, where today's stories are told by tomorrow's doctors. Coming up on today's show, Patch Adams, the well-renowned physician and social activist, will tell us about his lifelong dedication to caring for patients all over the world. And he'll tell us about how his decision to do so came after dark moments early in his life. Here's a preview.
I made myself suicidal. And so I was hospitalized 3 times in 1 year. I wanted to die because I didn't want to live in the adult world. And in the last hospitalization, I had one of those aha moments where I realized you don't kill yourself, you make revolution.
Again, that was Patch Adams, and we'll hear more from him and a whole lot more on today's Season 6 finale of Radio Rounds right now.
Come the radio round, we're round, we're round. Welcome to Radio Rounds.
Welcome to Radio Rounds, everyone. I'm Avash Kalra.
And I'm John Corker. We're so glad that you could all join us today, whether you're listening on the web, on the radio, or via our iTunes podcast sometime in the future. Avash and I recently had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Patch Adams, whom we simply call Patch at his request. A 1971 graduate of the medical school at Virginia Commonwealth University, Patch is a physician, a social activist, and an author. 40 years ago, he founded the Gesundheit Institute, a holistic medical community that's provided free medical care to thousands of patients since it began. He has devoted much of his career to changing America's healthcare system and has dedicated much of his life work to bringing joy to orphans and patients all around the world. A lot of you might recognize his name from the 1998 movie called Patch Adams, starring Robin Williams, which told part of Patch's tale, but certainly far from the complete story.
John, it's been over a decade now since that movie debuted, so we wanted to find out who the real-life Patch Adams is and how he chose to dedicate his life so selflessly to his work and what he's done in the 10 years since. As the founder of the Gesundheit Institute, Patch has given workshops and lectures in over 65 countries, built and support clinics, schools, and orphanages from El Salvador to Cambodia, and he's brought the joy of clowning, and he'll describe that further, to all corners of the globe. Perhaps more importantly, Patch loves people and embraces all human interactions and connections, and we wanted to share his motivations with all of you today.
We would like to mention beforehand, though, that this interview does contain some sensitive language. We started by asking Patch to describe his formative childhood years that heavily influenced his trajectory toward medicine and healing.
First and foremost, I had what I call I used to say great mother, but I like to say healthy, undamaged mother, which would mean that they were great. She gave me self-esteem, which in my 4-hour interviews with patients was in about 3% of our population. And so she made me the inquiring, loving, playful, curious, hungry for life person. And I grew up that way with my father away fighting wars. I was born in 45. I lived on army bases until I was 16. The last 7 years of his life, we were overseas in Germany. He died from war when I was 16. It broke my heart. I actually never really knew him. He was a shell of a father. And when he died in 1961, we moved to the South, and I was placed in an all-white school. and I came face to face with hate. My first reaction as a sensitive and fragile human being is I wept and wept and wept and wept. I realized my country was fake and religion was fake and that adults were fake and that we actually lived in a country where a black person couldn't use a toilet or a drinking fountain, much less a hotel or a restaurant of a white person. And the way I heard the students say the word nigger, I actually, as happy as a kid as I was, I didn't want to live in that world. My mother was not an activist, so I did not know yet activism. And I made myself suicidal. And so I was hospitalized 3 times in 1 year. I wanted to die because I didn't want to live in the adult world. And in the last hospitalization, I had one of those aha moments where I realized you don't kill yourself, you make revolution. And from that second, I turned on the dime. Because my mother gave me self-esteem, I decided to serve humanity in medicine. And as a personal decision, I wondered, what could I do to make myself an instrument for peace and justice and care in every moment the rest of my life? So I decided to never have another bad day, that I was going to be revoltingly happy all of the time the rest of my life. I have lived that without interruption for 48 years. And so I left the hospital at the third hospital at 18 on fire to make revolution for loving. I was a person who had no skills at dating at that time in my life, and I never had to study. So I voraciously, as an extreme extrovert, went out and studied people. For example, I called up wrong numbers every day for a couple of years, for a couple of hours to practice talking with people. I spent 10 hours a week for several years going up and down elevators to engage people with that door shut. I started to look through the newspapers for clubs of any kind. I went to black Muslim meetings, KKK meetings, young Republican meetings, and horticultural meetings to fall in love with people and to make myself at home in every possible human community. I'm a voracious reader. I probably read 150 books a year and was doing that since I was 18. So I've read a huge amount of the great literature. I know John Grisham. And I was very influenced at 18 by Walt Whitman, by Nietzsche, by Dostoevsky, and then a huge number of writers that all seemed to reinforce where my mental life was constructing the person I am. And so by the time I had entered medical school in 1967, I was a formed revolutionary. I knew I wouldn't have to study very much, so I used this time to study whole systems in healthcare historically and around the world with the idea to create a hospital that would address every problem of the way care was delivered in one model. So I started the Gesundheit Institute and have been obsessively crazed ever since.
Tell our listeners a little bit about how a patient is treated at your institute. I know that you integrate arts into the treatment plan. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, first, everything is free. Second, every staff person, the cleaning person and the surgeon make the same salary, $300 a month, so everyone makes less money than whoever comes. And that there's no one that's a boss. It's a communal eco-village. I used to say that we use their disease as a trick to get them into a university of human culture, which I think is as true as calling it a hospital. The ideal patient would come when they're well, with their whole family, and stay maybe a week to get to know the sanctuary. My initial interviews with an adult patient are 4 hours long, to get to know the patient and their family, to have them integrated. So if it's the mechanic, they're working in the garage of the hospital. If they're a musician. They're playing music at night. They're getting to know people. They're getting to have a sense of who the staff is. They're falling in love with each other, the staff and the patient. The children are creating their own relationships. And so that's one way to interface. That's our ideal, again, that you come healthy, you hang out so that you really, my ideal patient is somebody who wants a deep, intimate friendship with me. So ideally, you don't do that when you're sick. You do that when you're well.
Patch, it's clear that each of your interactions with your patients is much more well-rounded and global in scope in terms of trying to heal and improve the patient situation than maybe a typical initial situation that you saw as inadequate in your residency or in your medical training.
But let me just give you an example, okay? What do you do when you find that this woman who's sitting in your office maybe needs suturing, that it's the third time she's been beaten by her husband? What do you do in that 7.8-minute visit? Suture her up, and maybe you need to move her out of her marriage. That's the most dangerous work we did, was move wives away from, or partners away from the men that beat them. Because I always said, leave the bastard. If he hits you once, he'll hit you again. And then you might hear a two-hour discussion why she's staying.
That's the idea of compassion that comes out, going beyond just the medical knowledge that you learn in medical school, but to be a compassionate human being and strive to heal that patient's situation. You have said before that no medical school in the United States teaches compassion. So do you have any ideas? How do you think that we can get medical schools to revolutionize their education system to begin to include that element of compassion so future physicians are better prepared and more willing to address that greater, bigger foundational issue that you were talking about in that example with that patient?
Well, to tell you the truth, I think if medical schools cared about, they would be teaching it. Some of them teach a token class. But in my medical school, you wouldn't graduate unless you were first compassionate. You could not graduate based on whether or not your classmates and the staff felt you were a compassionate human being. Because the practice of medicine is the practice of compassion. You can never, ever promise a cure to any patient. You can always promise a care. I've just moved to Illinois, to Urbana, the University of Illinois, and I just had an MD-PhD student who I met at the National AMSA Convention, and I said, look, for free, let's work together to create not a compassion course, but a four-year study of what compassion is. Because I suspect, actually, we don't have a compassion course because we don't know what it is.
I know that you have done a lot of work, not just here in the U.S., and I'm sure a lot of our listeners know, you've done work all over the world. You've lectured students, you've opened orphanages and clinics. Tell us a little bit about how rewarding that aspect of your work has been, to not just care for people here to the extent that you do, but to spread that message of joy and really treating the whole patient and their communities all over the world.
When you work for the Love Revolution, it's only rewarding. You look in the mirror when you get up in the morning and you love yourself. And the last 28 years, we have been intensively studying the health of communities and societies. And what I can say is people everywhere are beautiful, and that human nature is not greed and power and all of the things that people are calling human nature in my growing up. Human nature is that we're beautiful. I've clowned in 70 countries, and everywhere people are beautiful. You know, I don't want to say that it's any more meaningful working for the worst tragedies of the world than it is on going on an elevator where you can just see a wealthy business person uptight. And you say, hi, how's it going? And the next thing you know, by four or five floors, you've made a human connection.
The value of these moments of interacting with people is just one of the reasons why people go into medical school, but it's abstract at that point, and you've made it very concrete in your career. I'm wondering, after all these years of taking care of other people, clowning, as you mentioned, all over the world, are there specific interactions, now when you look back on these 40-plus years, that specific moments or interactions that you've had that stand out to you?
Well, I can't think of one that doesn't stand out. When you love people, when you love life, it's all standing out. There are varieties of moments. You know, I'm in love with Susan, and that first kiss and the birth of your children and all of those things, the Grand Canyon, the redwood tree, there are billions of moments. You know, I've been at 10,000 deathbeds as a clown. I don't distinguish one different from the other. You see that your humanity, your caring, your connecting in some way relieves suffering. You know, it doesn't go, oh yeah, another moment of relieving suffering. They're all highlights that in the love of life, it is living that is the highlight, that you live the sustained high of the privilege it is to be alive, to work for peace and justice and care for all people, and to be as much in that when you suddenly stop and listen to rustling of the leaves as the wind blows through the trees. I mean, all the corny stuff.
Yeah, and one thing I feel compelled to ask, just because I know that a lot of our listeners certainly have seen the film that was based on your life to some degree, I know that you've done much more than was portrayed in the film and much more since then. What are your thoughts generally on that film starring Robin Williams that came out quite a while ago now about your life and the founding of your institute?
Well, at first I was embarrassed for it because I'm, you know, as I've studied everything else, I've studied films, and it doesn't add anything to the history of filmmaking. You know, Kurosawa's film on doctors is much more interesting than... And at first, again, as an intellectual, the film was a Hollywood movie. And a film with my name on it that doesn't mention peace and justice, how can it be about me? And a film that promised to build our hospital from the hundreds of millions of dollars it made, and that none of that was donated to me, that's the political me. And then I've seen the consequences of the film, the 50,000 letters that I've gotten from people from 120 countries saying, I saw the film and I decided to be a doctor caring about their patients, or the 3,000 projects that have contacted me and said, I saw the film and now I did this clinic, that school, this orphanage. You know, what I saw is that the film, simple and innocent as it is, it fed a hunger. The film feeds, in a Reader's Digest way, people's overwhelming hunger for even the remotest picture about loving care. And that's what it fed. And God bless it for doing that. People read their hunger on a lot more deep a plane than the movie actually gave. And that maybe people will go from watching that to watching Kurosawa's Redbeard. Or they'll read John Berger's A Fortunate Man, or William Carlos Williams' short stories, his doctor stories. Or maybe, who knows what they'll do? They'll follow their dreams to serve humanity and go, yes, it was formulaic, and yet it fed a hunger. And I have grown to love the film. Writers are now working on a Patch Adams 2, and that selling my soul to the devil by buying into the world of fame, which is probably the biggest nightmare of my life, that because I became famous as an old fart, it didn't hurt me. My friends are protected, and I've never given an autograph, and I have used the film for political reasons ever since then. Before I took clowns into war, before the film, it took 7 months to get UN permission, and since the film, it took 4 days. And so It's done a lot of good for humanity, and, you know, it's probably some part of you all wanting me on your show. And so if I get to say things like end market capitalism, if the movie gets me permission in front of people to say that, then God bless the movie.
Patch, thanks so much for joining us today. Our great hope is that all of our listeners make the same decision that you did so many years ago. Thanks again.
Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Rounds, and I'm Avash Kalra, and that was Patch Adams, founder of the Gesundheit Institute. John, you and I certainly had a great time talking to Patch. Now, Patch obviously has done work all around the world. He's developed intimate relationships with his patients through his 40 years of medical work here and abroad. And John, what he's really been able to do in order to accomplish those deep, intimate relationships is his training, his self-training of making human connections. And, you know, we talked about this issue a little bit in the interview, whether or not medical schools train their medical students about compassion. And I know that you and I feel like here at our medical school, we do have some formal and informal compassion training. What are your thoughts on that issue?
Well, I do think we're presented with a number of opportunities here at Wright State to integrate the didactic knowledge or the kind of factual medical knowledge that we learn on a daily basis with what it truly means to be a physician. Okay, so there's more to being a doctor than just rote memorization of facts. There's an application there. And here at our school, at least, when we're taught how to apply that knowledge, it's integrated with doing so in kind of the scene of a compassionate physician. Now, that being said, I have friends at medical schools all over the country who have made it clear through our informal conversations that their medical education is very different than ours in many ways. And, you know, to say that compassion is not taught, I don't know if that's the case across the board. I just know that doctors should start from the foundation or from the baseline of wanting to create these close relationships with their patients. And I'm going to sound like a broken record here. We talk so much on this show about the difference between healing diseases, or I guess treating diseases, and healing patients. There is a fundamental foundational difference there that I think serves as the basis of Dr. Adams' whole practice. And we can't truly heal the entirety of our patients until we create a relationship that goes beyond that 7.8-minute superficial evaluation that he talked about in the interview.
And Patch, he has this mindset, and I'm wondering if you think that this is an exception to the rule, or if all physicians at some level have a similar mindset to what Patch has. You know, he, in a part of the interview that we didn't air, he said that his question for himself wasn't, will I be able to do this, but how can I do this? And this being caring for patients almost to a fault all over the world. What do you think? Do you think this mindset that Patch has is an exception to the rule?
Well, and I don't know that I have enough experience in enough different settings yet to be able to say definitively whether it's the exception, but it seems like the exception. I think medicine is perceived in a certain way. Doctors are perceived in a certain way by patients across the country and really across the world. And in some cases, perception is reality. Okay, so I think probably in reality, there are more compassionate physicians out there than we give ourselves credit for, but there are enough uncompassionate physicians to give us this perception of being an uncompassionate profession. Dr. Adams is quite countercultural and somewhat anti-establishment to the way medicine is currently set up today. Mm-hmm. But these intimate personal relationships that he talks about physicians having with their patients, you know, I think are something great to strive for with every patient. So, you know, Avash, going back to this difference that you mentioned between will I be able to do this and how can I do this? Why is that such an important distinction to make in order to become a good doctor?
Well, I think it's an important distinction to make because you don't have to be a doctor in order to realize that distinction. Patch talked about being universally friendly. He talked about how, in his mind, it's not more important just to help people after a devastating earthquake compared to just someone on the street. And really, you don't have to be a physician to appreciate that. Anyone can approach a life situation with compassion. And I think that if the distinction isn't really whether or not that question is for physicians and just anyone, you know, as a medical student, not yet a physician, it's something I can really appreciate.
That's absolutely right. So, you know, we invite all of our listeners today to kind of pay it forward, this message that Patch has shared with us, to join him in his revolution of love, as he said, or his love revolution, and become healers yourselves. Whether you're a medical student, pre-medical student, or not involved in the medical establishment, you don't need to be a medical doctor to be a compassionate healer. So I think that if nothing else, Patch will see this episode as being worth it if just one person goes out and commits to being a compassionate healer in their daily life.
Well, I just hope Patch likes this episode more than he liked the movie.
That would be great.
Thanks again to our featured guest, Patch Adams. We very much enjoyed speaking with him.
And what a great way to close our season. What a season it's been.
There's certainly a lot to look forward to in season 7 also when we return in January of 2012, just a few weeks from now. You'll still be able to tune in every week on WWSU 106.9 FM and WYSO 91.3 FM as well. And for our listeners on WYSO, these weeks in between our seasons will be filled with reruns of past episodes. Of course, anyone can find out about all of our previous or upcoming episodes on www.radiorounds.org.
And Avash, we do have a grand milestone coming up in the spring.
That's right, John. The spring will celebrate our 100th episode. It's actually going to be around tax time, if my projections are correct, in mid-April. But it's going to be a spectacular celebration for sure. We're looking forward to doing that. We're also going to have episodes this spring on patient safety issues, a mini-series on that. And we'll also do a mini-series on medical humanities.
And of course, you can always contact our team at Radio Rounds via email, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter. All that information is on radiorounds.org, where you can now listen to all past episodes on demand. These podcasts are also available as free downloads on iTunes. Just search the iTunes store for Radio Rounds.
We'd now like to thank and credit those who made today's show possible.
Production made possible in part by MedPlus Advantage, sponsored by the American Medical Association, providing group disability and life insurance to students and residents through participating educational institutions. Visit us at medplusadvantage.com.
The American Medical Association's MedPlus Advantage Insurance Program is teaming up with Radio Rounds and Timmy Global Health to bring you Take a Trip with Timmy, an essay and video contest for interested students. The winner will spend 2 to 3 weeks working with Timmy Global Health medical teams and Timmy partner organizations in either Ecuador or Guatemala. As part of the prize package, the winning student will receive a free iPad 2 and digital underwater GPS camera. They'll also have an opportunity to blog each day about healthcare in the developing world while in their country. Submissions will be accepted in December 2011, and the winner will be selected and notified in early 2012. Stay tuned for more rules and details, and in the meantime, you can always check out more at www.takeatripwithtimmy.com.
In addition, Radio Rounds is proudly partnered with the Student Doctor Network, online at studentdoctor.net. Find answers to your questions about medical school or residency programs. Ask questions in SDN's online forums and get answers quickly. It's fast, easy, and available now at studentdoctor.net.
A big thanks goes out as well to our entire hardworking staff here at Radio Rounds, and of course to all of you out there listening.
Please remember that the views and opinions expressed on Radio Rounds are not representative of the views and opinions of the partners of Radio Rounds or of the Wright State University Boonshoft School of Medicine.
Join us next season or on WYSO for some reruns of some of our best past episodes, and be sure to check out radiorounds.org for all up-to-date information.
Have a great winter, everyone. Thanks again for listening. For our entire staff here at Radio Rounds, we'll see you in 2012. Happy holidays. I'm Avash Kalra.
And I'm John Corker. And one day,
we'll be your doctors.
Here come the radio rounding, we're rounding. Welcome to Radio Rounds.